from high above Times Square in Midtown Manhattan, third most listened to show in all of America. Hello, you sick, twisted freak. Welcome to the program. We go to Christopher Monckton, otherwise known as Lord Monckton. May I call him Christopher? Do I have to call him Lord? I can't remember what we decided last time we spoke. Lord Monckton, how are you, sir?
I am fine. Are you on one knee and wearing white gloves and touching your forelock?
Of course I am, my liege.
In that case, you may carry on, sir.
All right. So you are quite the hot topic on Twitter and on the Internet. If we could just find a way to control the Internet. Oh, I remember it. Net neutrality. We'll get to that Thursday. Anyway, you are quite the topic because of this new global climate treaty that is coming in December.
Yes.
Tell me about it.
This is the conference of the states parties to the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, which is a hell of a mouthful, I know. But this has been in the planning for 2 years, ever since the same conference met in Bali. They always meet somewhere nice. This time it's going to be Copenhagen.
Mm-hmm.
And at Bali it was planned that as soon as they had got George Bush out of the way, they would push through a climate treaty which would involve the vast transfer of wealth from the West to poorer countries in the name of what is called reparations for climate debt. Now, the extraordinary thing about the draft treaty, which I have now seen, is that it goes far further than anything that was planned at any previous session. What they're now going to do is to set up a world government. And the word government actually appears in the treaty, but, you heard it here first, the word election, democracy, vote, or ballot, does not appear anywhere in the 200 pages of the treaty.
All right, hold on just a second. Talking about paragraph 36 and 38, from what
That's
I understand.
Absolutely right.
Tell me,
the word government appears in there.
Do you have it in front of you?
I don't have it in front of me, but I can remember it quite well.
All right, of course.
And what it says is this: there will be a new, vast, interlocking bureaucratic entity created at huge expense to you and me, and that bureaucratic entity will have three purposes, the first of which is twice stated to be government. The second purpose is stated to be the transfer or redistribution of wealth from countries like ours to third world countries in reparation for what is described in the treaty as climate debt. In other words, we've been burning CO2 in huge quantities. They say that's altering the climate. Actually, we now know it isn't, but they say it is, and therefore they say we have to pay, get this, anything up to 2% of GDP every year to poorer countries. Now, the third element in the tasks of this new government will be what is called enforcement. In other words, the power of the new government to make democratic countries hand over their cash, whether they like it or not. But more than that, there will be an interlocking series of so-called technical panels which will have the right directly to intervene in the economies and in the environments of individual countries over the heads of their elected governments. So what we are talking about is a fledgling world government, and because it's not elected, it's essentially a communist world government.
May I, where are you now?
I am at the moment in Texas. I'm speaking at Texas A&M tonight, but I will be in D.C. or New York for the whole of the next week, because I'm trying to make sure that your Congress does not allow any of this to happen.
All right. You don't stick out at all in Texas, do you?
No, I fit in just fine. I'm tall, I wear snakeskin cowboy boots,
right,
and of course my Texan accent is famous.
Yes, you can just say, howdy, y'all. Go ahead.
Howdy, y'all.
See, I mean, you fit right in. All right. So, what I'd like to do is I'd like to spend an hour with you, quite honestly, Lord Monckton, and have you on the TV show, and maybe bring in Ambassador John Bolton about this as well.
He would be a wonderful man. I'd love to. It'd be an honor to take part with you and with him in such a program.
Now, have you ever met before?
I have met him briefly, but it would be really good to have a proper chance to talk to him on this, because
All right.
he would certainly, with his vast experience, be able to put this in context far better than I could.
Well, now here's what now this is the global climate treaty that we are expected to sign, right?
That's right.
And this is something that the president has made a priority, et cetera, et cetera.
That's right. The danger is that now that he's been given his Nobel Peace Prize, if he goes to Copenhagen with Al Gore at one elbow and Jim Hansen at the other, in front of the keening zombies in their tens of thousands, he will sign anything. And he won't read the small print. Nobody seems to have read the small print until I picked it up. It's quite extraordinary that this has got as far as it has, with nobody noticing that what they're going to do is what Maurice Strong, who originally, he's a Canadian bureaucrat, who originally set up the structure of the UN's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change sort of 20-odd years ago. He has always wanted this to transmogrify into a world government. And he is now going to get his way far faster than any of us had realized, unless we can stop him, and we only have weeks to stop this.
Well, I do know that if you look at the transnationalism and the transnationalists that you know, the New York Times has denied that Barack Obama is surrounding himself with, this is the direction they're going. Now, here's the concern.
Yeah,
the concern is that President Obama would sign this, and then it would be ratified by Congress.
Well, now, I'll tell you what has to happen. Under your Constitution, I think it's Article 6, there has to be a two-thirds majority of the Senate in order to ratify it. Now, I don't think that he'll get a two-thirds majority in the Senate. I'm reasonably sure there are enough senators, including Blue Dog senators, who will realize that if they hand over your democracy and your constitution and make it subject to this new treaty, because that's how your constitution works, Article 6, taken with the Vienna Convention on the Interpretation of International Treaties, means that an international treaty prevails over your constitution. And so if he signs away your constitution, he is signing away for the first time your democracy to an alien bureaucratic entity that you don't elect. That's the danger. Now, if he can't get it through the Senate, during his election campaign, he and his staff began saying that they didn't like that part of the Constitution that meant they had to get two-thirds of the Senate to agree. And the way that he is proposing to do it, and this was announced during his campaign, is to get a simple majority in both houses, which he can, of course, get, because he has a reasonable majority in both houses, so that the treaty will be enacted into your domestic law. Now, that is slightly less drastic than if the Senate were to ratify it, because at least, in theory, you can repeal a domestic law, whereas you can't resile from a treaty. I mean, once you've signed a treaty, the only way you can get out of that officially is by getting all the other states' parties to agree to let you go. And since you'll be the country that's paying most in the way of reparations, there's no way they will let you go once they've got you into it.
Right, and here's also the other problem that we have.
Yeah.
When you can't get the Senate to ratify it, what they do is they get the states to join in and the cities to join in,
yes,
and then have it contested in court. And what they do is, then the Supreme Court looks for the movement of law. They,
yes,
they look and say, well, which direction is the country and the world moving?
Yes.
And if the country and the world is moving into, well, yeah, there's several cities, several states, several countries that are moving in this direction, well, yes, then it's okay.
Aha. There is one obstacle that they're going to face if they go down that route, and they know it, and it's this: that we now know for certain by measurement that the effect of CO2 and all greenhouse gases on temperature globally is less than 1/6 of what the UN says it is. This was a paper published just last month by the gallant Professor Richard Lindzen of MIT, whom I'm sure you've heard of. He's the Alfred P. Sloan Professor of Planetary and Atmospheric Sciences.
Yeah, we've had him on the program before.
That's,
yes,
that's right. I mean, he's a lovely man, and he is the guy who really understands what's happening in the atmosphere. He has done a dazzlingly simple but dazzlingly careful measurement that has taken him 20 years. He's been accumulating the data so that he could do it. And he's just published the result. The amount of outgoing radiation escaping into space that is supposed to reduce enormously as the temperature warms down here. That's the official theory, because of all the greenhouse gases getting in the way. What is actually happening is that nearly all of it is getting out into space just as before. So the warming effect of CO2 over the whole of the next 100 years is going to be well below 2 Fahrenheit degrees. I mean, just negligible. It might even be as little as 1 Fahrenheit degree. And frankly, now that that is known by measurement, all of the UN's reports on which this treaty is based are out of date, and the Supreme Court's own judgment in Massachusetts v. EPA, where they said CO2 was a pollutant because it might cause warming, are now also out of date because the facts have changed, and it's now been a measured result. There's no argument with it. Nobody's dared to argue with this paper.
How does anybody argue with the fact that when sunspot activity was at its highest, the Earth was the warmest, and when solar activity is now at literally zero,
yes,
it's cold?
That's right. You've had your first snow in Pennsylvania in October since records began.
Haven't had snow. In Connecticut, we had snow last week.
Yeah.
We haven't had that kind of snow. The last time we had snow this early or this kind of weather, yeah, we had 15 feet of snow that winter.
That's right. And the one thing I think we can very safely say is that that is not consistent with a story of global warming. But now that we've got this measured result, all the previous UN reports were based on computer models. Now, computer models are another word for guesswork. They were just guessing. And their guesses were wildly implausible. I'm actually feeling very smug because a year ago in the journal Physics and Society, I published a long paper which established by theoretical means that the warming for a doubling of CO2 this century would be less than 2 degrees Fahrenheit. And I published that result a year before Dick Lindzen did it by measurement. But it's Dick's paper with his formidable authority behind it, and because he's done it by straightforward measurement of the comparison between changes in surface temperature and changes in outgoing radiation, that is the paper that will bring this scare finally to an end.
Well, I know that you're the third Viscount Monckton of Benchley, but what the hell does that even mean? Who are you, really? I mean, honestly, a lot of people listening right now are Lord Monckton. He sounds like Dr. Bombay.
Well, how very kind of you. No, I am a hereditary peer. In other words, I did not achieve anything that I achieve by merit. I had it thrust upon me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as Winston Churchill used to say, some are born great, some achieve greatness, some have greatness thrust upon them. I had nobility thrust upon me by having very carefully chosen the right parents.
So it's
only a matter of luck. I therefore can't claim any special brilliance just because I am a lord. On the other hand, the title does fascinate people, and I'm afraid I do exploit it quite shamelessly.
Right. What is your background?
So my background is as an advisor to Margaret Thatcher on scientific questions, including this one. I spent 4 years in her office when she was Prime Minister of the United Kingdom at 10 Downing Street. Mine was the office, if you go 2 floors up, just above the door, and 2 windows to the right. Those are the ones where I was. She was furious one Christmas when she was taking a picture of the Christmas tree outside Downing Street, and the only 2 windows that weren't lit in the whole building were mine because I'd gone home. But I worked there for 4 years, and
well,
I gave her advice on all manner of policy, but particularly science policy. Not because I'm a scientist. I'm not. I don't pretend to be. I'm a classical architect by training, so I do have sort of a certain amount of mathematical knowledge. I've made a very good fortune out of mathematics over the years.
As the guy who did this for Margaret Thatcher, what do you think of John Holdren, our science czar?
Well, I'll tell you what I think of him. He was the guy who predicted 30 years ago that there was going to be an enormous ice age, and so much ice would build up on Antarctica that there would be a tidal wave of enormous proportions when the ice fell into the sea, and half of humanity would be wiped out by it. Now, that was the guy who was saying that 30 years ago and saying we must therefore close down everything, and he said we must have population police to tell you and me how many children, how many little honorable Monctons there can be.
Yeah.
He wanted to do that. Worldwide population police. That's the kind of guy he is. And if you ask me whether I like the sound of that, the answer is no.
Well, it's amazing that, you know, what country that sounds like is China. And there are so many people now that are in our administration that are revolutionaries and Marxist or Maoists.
Well, Glenn, can I say that you have been doing your country an enormous service by exposing who these people are, how they are connected, and the unpleasant organizations who do not mean the West well with whom this administration seems to have far too many close connections. And I think, had it not been for you, none of us would ever have known any of this, and I do congratulate you on having picked it up.
Well, thank you very much, sir. I appreciate it, and you know, I just wish I could be knighted or something, but we don't do that here. I think I get a Slurpee at the end of it.
Well, I'll tell you one thing you get. President Obama has decided he doesn't like Fox News, on which you appear so splendidly.
Yes.
and I dare say that you are part of that network.
Yes, oh, I'm
so
very well aware of that.
That's a compliment.
All right, I tell you what, Lord Monckton, let me get together and see if I can get a time when you can be on, and also Ambassador Bolton. I mean, there's no bad blood between the two of you, right?
Not in the least. I should be enormously honored to appear with him.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then let me see if I can arrange that, and then we'll take that and get people on this right away, because you know, these people will do it if people don't wake up.
They will, and if you get that on the television for an hour, that will frighten them off. I think it'll be enough.
You got it, sir. Thank you very much.
Bless you.
You bet. Bye bye. Lord Monckton. So we'll, Stu, see if you can line that up.
Sure.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Splendid, isn't it? Doesn't he sound like Dr. Bombay from the old Bewitch?
He's funny, too.
Yeah, he is. Yeah. I like him.